Flora Robson and Marius Goring in the 1970 production of The Streets of Pompeii by Henry Reed, with music by Anthony Smith Masters. The Streets of Pompeii was first broadcast in 1952 and awarded the Italia Prize the following year. The Streets of Pompeii.
Once more, these plains once more with barren ashes covered. Once more the lava, once more turned to stone. The traveler's feet once more clink over it. Once more. And the snake nests and coils in the sun's heat. The rabbit seeks its familiar winding home. Once more. And once, the garden and the palace and the noise of the once prince, once powerful, broke this air. The temple and the arena and the house, once. And the merchant went through the street in the early morning. The sailor lolled in the wine shop, once. And to this place let him come bravely now and now, whose wont it is to praise men's power and chance. Here let him see how the harsh nurse covers her children's eyes. On these bright shores full painted, let him see, here of the human race, the magnificent, progressive destiny.
Can I help you? You have a thorn in your hand?
No, it is nothing, thank you. I scratched my arm on a thistle there by the gate. But it is nothing.
But it is bleeding.
Only a little.
Let me give you my handkerchief.
No, thank you.
It is very clean. I have not used it yet. You see, it is still folded where my mother ironed it.
No, but I must not...
Non importa. A handkerchief, that is all.
But...
Non importa. Look, I will put it round your arm, like that. Otherwise the blood will run all down your wrist. One can bleed to death.
Oh, not from a scratch.
Yes, it is very dangerous. Have you a pin?
No, I'm sorry.
Then I will tie a knot.
Thank you. But it will spoil your handkerchief.
No, it is not a serious handkerchief.
I hope not.
There.
Thank you.
Niente.
But it will...
You like Pompeii?
Yes, very much. But I have not seen it yet.
I have been here 5 days in succession. It is very interesting and historical.
It is a marvel they have excavated so much.
They will excavate more.
Yes, it is wonderful. It is very dead and ancient.
Beautiful, however.
Yes, it is very beautiful. In this weather, it is very beautiful, extended here in the sunlight.
And she is beautiful also. Her dark hair shines and flashes in dusky gold about her shoulders. And when she smiles, what she discloses of laughter is less than she conceals. Does she deride me? When I touched her arm, here in the hot, dead street, it was living and firm and white and smooth and simple and cool and damp, like mushrooms in my hands.
It is very beautiful extended here in the sunlight. And you have been here 5 times already.
My father and uncle are architects in Naples, and I must study the structures.
Oh, yes, you study them.
But also for pleasure. I'm very contented here. I'm very contented here at Pompeii in Ercolano.
Is he always contented? His eyes are shining. Oh, handsome boy. When he took my arm in his hand and bent his head, I saw above his eyebrows a dew as faint as down. And he took my arm. Perhaps we shall never touch each other again. Only perhaps if we shake hands at parting.
I'm very contented at Pompeii in Ercolano. You do not know the excavations yet?
Not yet.
Perhaps we can make a short walk together then.
Well, thank you, but I ought to wait for my friend. She is rather late.
Perhaps she will not come.
Oh, yes, she promised.
Perhaps she has already gone.
She would not go without me.
Perhaps she has already started to look for you in the ruins.
Yes.
And if we make a short walk together, we shall certainly find her. She will probably be in the forum.
Yes, very well.
We will go to the best places. We will go up the harbour street and into the forum. And if we see her, I will drop behind.
Yes, thank you.
Andiamo allora. Io mi chiamo Attilio. Come si chiama lei, Francesco?
They go. As they pass through the dark tunnel, they exchange names and politely felicitate each other on the possession of them. He is called Attilio, she Francesca. They emerge into the sunlight of the street of the harbour, and here they exchange ages. He is 17, she 15. They touch briefly but appreciatively on the gulf of years between them, and pass on to a comparison of place of origin, number of family, occupation of father, and so on. They are both from Naples. She has come out by train that morning. He is at present staying with relations not far away, on the hill of Bosco Reale. The brilliant light of day pours down on them, and the shadows of the broken columns of the basilica pass over them as they ascend the lumpy sidewalk towards the forum. At the end of a wall, Vesuvius becomes visible, and automatically they turn their eyes north to regard him across the ruins of the Temple of Apollo.
And this is the Temple of Apollo?
Ah, yes, Apollo.
It is not a great thing, of course. It is a simple Aeneas-style peripteros.
A simple...
Oh, yes. The podium has a certain interest. Only now, of course, it... Oh, but look, Francesca, look!
At what?
The foreigners!
But there are always foreigners.
But look at that lady there.
What is she doing?
She's climbed up onto the plinth of Apollo's statue.
She's sitting on his foot, with her arm curled round his leg.
And her head against his thigh.
Is that all right, Phil?
Fine.
Is she exalted, perhaps?
No, they are only making a photograph of her.
I'm ready, if you are.
Okay, Judy.
Oh, che strani. They are Austrian, perhaps.
No, I think they are English. The gentleman's shorts are so long.
Oh, yes.
Let us go on to the forum. It is just around the corner.
Here to the light of heaven returns from underground the skeleton of dead Pompeii, disinterred by avarice or piety from underneath oblivion. Here in the forum's emptiness, erect the pilgrim stands between the fallen colonnades, a and sees with a long look the smokeless hill, the cloven summit threatening still, the shattered fragments of this place.
Vesuvius, quenched and smooth-breasted in the summer air, it has changed many times overnight and can change again. Those smooth slopes dotted with intrepid white houses have still in them the power to burst open, to split from crest to base, to discharge their insane and unimaginable fire and filth upon the swarming, ardent life of the bay, and in a single night to extinguish a million people who yet live and multiply there, unconcerned.
Oh, sons of men, if I remember here your state on earth, how should I think of you? What should you seem? The soil you tread bears witness.
Earthquake. Here in the Forum, here alone, perhaps, are the successive fates of the town clear to the searching and expert young glance of Attilio. In the days of the Emperor Nero, this was a great public place, flanked by colonnades, admonished by temples, presided over by the statues of the powerful. In the year 63 of the Christian era, a vast earthquake tossed down the colonnades like daffodil stalks to the ground, and crashing stone against stone, half devastated the crowded, thriving town.
Here let him see how the harsh nurse covers her children's eyes. When he least fears her, she with one light gesture shakes away half his life, and with one other, and how little stronger, gives him annihilation.
Eruption. 16 years after the earthquake, the rebuilding of the city yet but half completed, the mountain broke open and obliterated the work, the city, and the men. In the months after, their fear had subsided, and fear does vanish quickly in this bright air. The survivors returned. Over the grey, impacted desert of their labours, still rose a little of what they had done, blackened capital and architrave, bruised entablature and pediment, disfigured abacus, metope, Echinus. They stripped away all they might use elsewhere and bore it off. Perhaps they were looters. Others dug downwards where they believed their houses to have been, broke when they could through the grey hardness to the packed soft nests of pumice stones, the lapilli beneath. Here they disinterred what they could, hacking their way through the bright pictured walls from room to room. Then they gave up, and the night of centuries fell over the place, till even where it had been was forgotten. All this the Forum and the adjacent streets laconically record, the half-finished granaries, the shattered achievements, the ravished treasures. But does the place yield up its vanished people? Not here, not yet. Here is only that other death, scarcely less solemn, scarcely less pitiful. The death of places.
Yes, there are a lot of people here this morning.
Do you know any of them?
Only by sight. I often see the two over there, by the temple.
The old gentleman and lady in the straw hats?
Yes, they are also English. They are very nice. They never speak to anyone or to each other, but they think a great deal. They are very intelligent. I think they are an archaeologist and his consort. They are very white and clean. Do you like them?
Yes, very much.
And is your friend here, Francesca?
I cannot see her, no.
What is her name?
Maria Grazia.
Well, we shall find her.
Perhaps I should go back.
No, she will be over there in the north, in the rich quarter. She's probably with the crowds at the house of the brothers Vettius.
Oh, I've heard of them. I've seen pictures.
Yes, everyone goes there. There are many grand houses in that part of Pompeii. The businessman lived there. It was convenient and near the Forum. The house of the dancing faun, the house of the gilded cupids, the house of the silver wedding. They are all over there.
You do not seem to think very highly of them.
But yes, of course I do. But I like better the places that are rather difficult to understand. Like this forum, for example. Like that great white marble rectangle, just standing there by itself. Over there, through the columns. Come and see.
What beautiful marble flowers and leaves all round it. It's like a great white picture frame, without a picture.
They call it the edifice of Eumachia. They say she was a priestess. She and her son...
Her son?
Oh, yes. They are said to have given it to the populace. Donated it, they say. But, of course, they don't know.
Who don't know?
The guidebooks, the experts.
Oh.
They don't really know, I think. That is why I like it. I like things from the past to have a little mystery still.
Well, there is a villa of the mysteries.
Ah, but that is a different kind. Mysteries there mean secret rites. The rites of Bacchus.
You'll pardon me, young gentlemen.
Signore?
Pardon me for interrupting, but we heard you mention the Villa of the Mysteries.
Can you tell us the way there? We left our guidebook back at the hotel.
Yes, with pleasure.
Oh, thank you.
You must go over there to the left and under the archway.
Under the archway, aye.
And keep straight on to the Street of Fortune.
The Street of Fortune. You remember that, McBride?
The Street of Fortune, eh?
Then turn to the left, così.
Così.
Così, until you come to the end of the excavations. And turn to the right, così, and go straight on. And always straight, and straight until you come to the Herculaneum Gate.
Uh-huh.
There is no gate there anymore. But keep straight on along the Street of the Tombs.
Aye.
And at the end, you'll find the Villa of the Mysteries. It is far.
Well, it seems fairly easy to find.
It is easy. But far.
Thank you, thank you.
Prego, signore, prego. Don't mention it.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Oh, signori.
Yes?
Would you like to borrow my guidebook?
Pardon?
Would you like to borrow my guidebook?
Oh, it's very kind of you, but how would we get it to your back?
Get it?
Get it to your back. Afterwards.
I'm...
How would we re-give it to ye?
Ah, capisco. Oh, we shall meet again. I'm here every day.
We might easily miss each other.
It's a big place, Pompeii.
Oh, you can leave it at the gate. The gatemen all know me. Or I can call for it at the hotel. I live very near.
No, thank you. I think we can manage without...
We're only just having a wee look around the place.
But thank you all the same. It was very thoughtful.
Not at all.
And thank you for the direction.
Prego, prego.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. How strange that they would not borrow the guidebook. I wonder why.
Chissà.
Were they Americans?
No. They were pure English.
Oh, yes?
Yes. One can tell by the accent.
Oh,
and now we must look again for Maria Grazia. She will be at the house of the Brothers Vettius. Andiamo?
Extraordinary thing, McBride, the way the young laddie wanted to make you take his guidebook like that. What is supposed to have been the motive behind such a gesture?
There may have been several motives, of course. The Latin races have always been noted for the ambiguity of their utterance and action. It may have been the preliminary to some form of blackmail or other.
I thought of that. I suppose he was trying to scrape some kind of an acquaintance with us, which we might have found very difficult to shake off later.
Especially if it presented himself at the hotel to collect the guidebook. You noticed he was gay and ready with that as an alternative suggestion.
Yes, it's mysterious. Though he seemed a reasonably agreeable and cleanly young lad.
Oh, aye, indeed.
Yes, still, he can't be too careful.
No.
Just look back over your shoulder in an inconspicuous manner, will he, and see if they're following us.
No. No, they seem to be making their way to the congeries of buildings over to the north.
Good. It was the presence of the young girl I didn't quite trust.
You mean she may have been some sort of a decoy, like?
Well, he may have been a decoy for her.
Uh-huh.
I suppose that was a guidebook he held out to you.
Attilio and Francesca have left the forum and are approaching the street of Nola. Some shared instinct tempts them to loiter a little as they go, giving this and that object on the way an intense and detailed examination that they know it does not always merit. The sun is higher, and the shadows in the street are shorter. Antiquity. Is it thus that the land of the dead will look at our first glimpse of it? At the moment of release into that long vacation, is it thus we shall see that country? Set out in empty streets, the fractured grey boxes of strangers' houses lining them into eternity, each containing something we cannot see, even though all seem shamelessly and horribly broken open to the still new air, the new still air of the morning, the vagueness and the lightness of morning, of a holiday morning in a strange land.
It is very dead and ancient.
Beautiful, however.
Yes, it is very beautiful. In this weather, it is very beautiful, extended here in the sunlight.
Which floods the hither and thithering streets, long, long or short, narrow, narrow or wide, straight, straight or curved. There are stepping stones across them. For water, always water, coursed all day and all night through these streets. Water gurgling and clucking in the streets, and the lull of water all through the night.
And everywhere dryness succeeds, and dryness through the long, long street, and heat and dryness on the stone. The only flow, the flood of sun. And everywhere the grass and weeds fight for and win their killing life.
Emptiness. Water and fire gone. Vacancy of earth and air. Empty.
Stand for a moment in this street. You are alone. The broken houses, hovels now or towering still, are all about. Peer through the gated door. Vestibule, fauces, atrium, the broken fount, the pillared hall, Actaeon on the scarlet wall, the locked Priapus in the box, the frantic, barking, silent dog mosaicked on the long, dead floor. Empty indeed this silent home.
Silence. Water and fire gone. Vacancy of earth and air. And from out of the house of Sallust, a lizard runs, pauses, hesitates. A lizard palpitates on the stone. Runs silently, silently, rustles between two grasses, skims up the wall. A lizard, pausing on the stone, waits. Palpitates. In the sun.
In, out, in, out, in, out. Breathe gently. In, out, in, out. Careful.
Watch.
Where? Stone under belly. Good. Hot all over back. Good. Yes. Noise? No. Grip. Sand? Sand under claw? Yes. Nice. Can wriggle? Yes. Good. Dirt all under belly, cold all over back. Dark. Breathe gently. Good. In, out, in, out, in, out, in, out, in, out, in, out, in, out.
Emptiness. Alone. And then at the end of the street, round the corner, voices again. The world.
Bill, we're going down here.
Okay, Judy, we'll catch you up later.
In, out, in, out, in, out, in, out. Noise? Yes. Better skip.
Voices round the corner again. Figures emerging idly, casually, few, into the street again.
March!
And again the light, bright skeins of life are knitted together again.
Marjorie! Marjorie!
Yes, dear? Sorry, I was peeping through this gate. It's locked. Should I ask the guide to unlock it?
Are there any statues inside?
Don't think so. Can't quite see.
Well, don't bother if there aren't any statues. How many more can we do?
More what, dear?
Snaps.
Oh, yes. I'll just peep at the cam. It says number 7.
2 left. And 8 on the other roll. 10. Should be faster.
We won't use them all here, will we?
Depends. I told Mum we'd get a snap of one or other of us with every damned statue in Pompeii. And we will. Where's Walter, blast him?
He and Bill seem to be looking at something with the guide.
Stealing a march. Come on, let's go back. Hi, Walter! What do you think you're doing?
It's okay, Judy.
Walter's waving to us not to go.
Not to go? My foot. What do they think they're up to? Come on, to horse for Herculaneum.
Oh, Judy.
It's okay, Judy. We're just coming.
Oh, damn. Are they coming back? We'd better go on. Sorry, scusi.
Signore.
I think we'd better get along. The girls. Signorina. Vengo, you know.
Ah, si, signor. The ladies. It is a better go on. Yes. Another time, eh?
Yes, quite. Don't say anything about it to the girls, will you?
No.
Sir. What are you two up to? What is it?
Nothing, Judy, nothing.
Come off it. What was it?
We were just chatting.
On the subject of what?
Nothing.
On the subject of what?
The man was just showing us... Well...
Showing you what?
Nothing, old girl, nothing. Now, are we going to take...
Showing you what?
It was a little stone obscenity. Perhaps the ladies also like it.
No, we must get on with the line.
It was that thing on the wall there.
Judy!
Damn it, Judy, don't point like that.
Well, think we don't know what that is. Continuare.
Si, signorina, sicuro. This is phallus.
Do look, Marjorie, such a whopping great lizard up on the wall there behind you.
You shut up.
It is a smaller stone of phallus, a fist to a side of the door. Now, you understand that we find two kind of phallus at Pompeii.
Really?
See, one is a phallus with wings, the other is phallus without wings.
I get it.
Now, when we find phallus with wings, it means much harvest, very great fruits, a good corn and wine this year. We say in Italiano, la fecondità.
And in English, fecundity. Same word.
Yeah, that I have not heard. Now, when we have phallus without wings, it means a house of gay life.
Care to stroll on a bit, Bill?
Yes, sir, let's.
This, ladies, is phallus without wings. It means gay time with girl. Oh, yes. Here in this house we have found immoral picture. They are now put into the Museum of Naples. Far safe. Here the gentlemen of the ancient days have always come for nicer time, for divertiment with girl.
Lupanari, in fact.
Yes, yes, lupanari.
Pretty good.
And if you wish, signorina, you can buy small bronze reproduction, with or without wings, at the gate.
Oh, good. Judy, you wouldn't. Yes, why not? Embarrass old Walter.
Oh, then I shall use the boy who sell them. They are quite, quite pretty. Thank you. Molto artistico. Many English like to take them home for their friends.
In, out. Breathe gently. Careful. In, out. Stone under belly. Good. Hot all over back. Nice. Near leaf. Noise? No. Can wriggle? Yes. Safe. Good. Stop now. In, out. Gently. Stone. Yes.
Noonday. the street stretching away in the distance to the mountain, to the hills, to the sea, to the plain, to the pine trees. Steady descent of heat upon tufa, limestone, brick, travertin, opus reticulatum, dust and earth. Here the excavators have dug well, have sometimes pieced together with excellent certainty. Here they have failed, been defeated. Here is a place, one of many, lost beyond conjecture, unredeemable.
What was that broken place that there meanly indicates a room? A small, uncertain wilderness, an unrecapturable thought, where seeding grass and arid bloom between the undeciphered stones cluster about the humps of earth and shake in this unshaken air.
Oblivion. Neglected space in the street, shabbiness of uninterpretable past. And right beside it, the wine bar, the thermopolium, recovered, clear, definite. Jolly the smooth counter, jolly the big containers, jolly the brown earthenware amphorae, clean and stacked side by side in jollity, jolly the polished marble. Here the out-of-work sailor lounged, scratched his thigh, spat in the gutter, bored. And the owner twitted him for incapacity, and meeting his resentful gaze, raised his eyebrows inquiringly, suggesting coolness, jolly coolness of room upstairs. Gay time with girl, or agony with girl, or boredom with girl. If he revisited this small cube of earth and air, it would be the same still, now as then.
Here is the spot, and all around nightmare silence in the ear, scentless and familiar heat. But the touch and sight remain now as then. The ghost returning here has found along the devastated lane one familiar place untouched, one shining corner that again can stir once more an ancient pain.
Hallucination. The single known and burning point in a waste of extinction. Fancies start up in the unreal heat, are warmed for a moment in the glowing sun, and evaporate on the listless air. Attilio.
Attilio?
Francesca? What were you going to say?
Oh, nothing. Something silly.
Oh, no. What was it? Dica.
I suddenly had the feeling...
Dica.
Only for a second, as I looked at the fallen house we have just passed, that if they dug hard enough into the air above it, it would reveal the tops of the houses.
Anch'io. Yes. I have felt that too. We must invent an aerial pick and shovel and see what we shall find.
I wish we could see what it all looks like from above, from up in the air. I wish we could see ourselves going in and out of the houses.
We should look like bees going in and out of a honeycomb.
Oh, yes. I would love to see it. Would you?
No.
Why?
Because then we should know where Maria Grazia is.
Basta.
Honeycomb. From above, from up in the air, ourselves going in and out of the houses, and into the cells of the honeycomb wander the visitors, the bees. Climb into the upper air. The streets of the city stretch below us, and that is how they look, purposeful, busy, intent. Invisible from here, the boredom, the vagueness, the pleasure, the flippancy, the amazement, the disappointment, the wondering how much longer it will be necessary to stay, the increase of hunger, the vague indigestion, the sudden suspicion of what Joan's real reason for going to Venice by herself after saying she would be all the summer in Portofino was. But nothing of this is apparent from above. Absorbed, lively, purposeful, the bees perform their allotted tasks in and out of the cells of the honeycomb. Sometimes they pause and rest. At the intersection of the street of Stabia and the street of Nola stand the old gentleman and lady whose whiteness, cleanness, intelligence and silence have earlier in the day won the approval of Attilio and Francesca. They appear engrossed in a long contemplation of the small, dry public fountain there. Away to the west of them, Judy, Marjorie, Walter and Bill have entered the house of the dancing form, in whose airy centre, looking strangely small and misplaced, the divine little dancer raises his green arms and snaps in drunken bliss his eternal fingers. Judy has observed the curling tail above the little wild creature's exquisite rump. She has decreed that a photograph be taken of this, with Walter crouched in the impluvium beside it, smiling uncertainly.
Like this, Judy?
No, crouch down, Walter. Crouch right down.
Oh, hell.
To the northwest, McBride and MacFarlane have arrived within 400 yards of the Villa of the Mysteries. They have remembered Attilio's directions and have followed them with care and exactitude. Attilio himself is now loitering in the street outside the house of the Vettii. Francesca has left him and entered the house among the swarming bees to discover if here indeed is the elusive Maria Grazia. She returns. No Maria Grazia. Attilio grins broadly, and she tries not to. They enter the house together, and he keeps close beside her as they make their way through the knots of people.
And there are paintings on all the walls, Attilio. I did not think the houses would be so large.
They look very undistinguished from the outside, and there are many larger than this. However, this one is always the most crowded because of the postcard stall.
Oh.
You must see the pictures of the Amorini. You will like them.
Yes, I have heard of them.
The House of the Vettii. Here once the two brothers passed their days and nights, walked, lay, drank, ate, and gave their orders. Aulus Vettius Restitutus, Aulus Vettius Conviva, freedmen manumitted by the same master. In some way they made their pile, bought the noble patrician house, took it over, lock and stock as it stood. It was theirs. To the pictures and ornaments which had been the best that money could buy and the artist create, they added the worst. It was theirs. Attilio knows as much, but is troubled by other thoughts about them. He follows Francesca, who wanders entranced before the frescoes of the tiny Amorini, the long, delicious trail of winged, domesticated cupids. Cupids gathering and expressing the grapes. Cupids bartering oil and wine, tasting and sampling. Cupids hammering and weighing gold. Cupids driving the stag-drawn chariots. Attilio stands beside her as she bends to contemplate them.
Ma guardi, che bello!
Francesca. Her name is Francesca.
And this one, Attilio, look.
The one in the chariot, yes.
He is drawn by leaping dolphins over the sea. How bravely he pounds them.
Eh già, non c'è male.
Ah, sweet Amorini.
Francesca. Her name is Francesca. Her smiles come and go, watching the antics of the little beguiling creatures, dimpling her smooth, warm cheek. Francesca. She must not pursue the round of the house like the rest. The house of the Vetti, house of the dirty brothers. She must not see what we saw. It was a joke when I went there with Giancarlo, with Eduardo and the boys. It was all right for us, though I wish I had never. Look. How her smiles flit over the curves of her mouth, as over the mouth of a baby, starting and starting again. She must not know what is there. I must not think of that room while she is here. Why did they build such a place? The filthy pair, evil old men, spewing their clever new sins over drunken girls. And their paintings, their little lewd paintings. No, for the love of God, not for Francesca.
Did you call me, Attilio?
Yes. What do you think of the garden?
The garden? I like the boy with the duck. But it looks very crowded with statues for such a small garden, as though they were all on sale.
What can you expect?
Expect?
When you think who they were.
Who?
The Vetti.
But I thought they were a great ancient family, like the... Well,
like the Gracchi?
Mm.
Not they.
But they had this beautiful house.
They ruined it. They were vile.
But they liked beautiful pictures. Look at the other wall, there.
I see it. But I do not understand painting in any case. At least, I mean...
Yes?
I mean... Oh, insomma, I know who Giotto was and who Leonardo. And I know the difference between Bellini and Mantegna. And even between Tintoretto and Veronese, who are often very alike. And Greco and Caravaggio.
And Pinturicchio?
Pinturicchio? No.
I can tell Pinturicchio.
Eh, brava. Let us go, Francesca. Let us go somewhere else. Si soffica qui dentro.
Of course, Attilio, but...
I'm suffocating here.
They go, and a vague sense of menace accompanies them. They leave unlooked at, among the luminous blue-green splendors of the paintings on the walls, one before whom it might have soothed Attilio to linger. It is the painting of the Mother of Ixion, draped, hooded, and sorrowful, small and ignored. Beside her towers the brown figure of Mercury, nude and plebeian. Behind them Hephaestus binds her son to the everlasting wheel. No one regards her. Her hand is raised, and her eyes are lifted in recognition of eternal calamity. It is... 12 centuries early, the ageless immemorial gesture and look of the Madonna, the posture of suffering maternity, the long tenderness now incapable to save, the onset of inextinguishable grief, the Pietà, the Addolorata, an agony known to Titian and to Bellini and Mantegna, between whom Attilio can distinguish, known to them all in time, but known here long before, already. Known also the means for its expression. McBride and McFarlane have reached their destination, the Villa of the Mysteries.
Aye, we do have to pay a further entrance fee.
Aha, I thought as much.
The Villa of the Mysteries. It stands on a separate island of stone. An islanded country house among the fields, the greatest of the houses here fetched up from the past. It stood on a point of land which in those days fell sharply away to the sea, and the splendor of the bay spread out in swept blue flatnesses before it. Capri, Ischia, Procida, Nisida, Posillipo, advancing and receding through the atmosphere. It is not easy to guess at the succession of lives that were lived here, the existences that beat and declined through its 90 rooms, its sound as it filled with a crowd of guests singing and drinking, its silence, perhaps, as countless slaves whispered their way about the expiring wants of some aging man or woman dying in loneliness here. And was it so indeed? And who was entertained? And did the visitors come muffled after dark for a forbidden purpose? Or were there none? It is not the grand atria, the peristyles, the baths we have come to see. There are as good elsewhere. You will not remember one from another. It is the great anteroom to the nuptial chamber. The whole of the ancient world is nothing to show us like the strange and startling centre to this abode. Enter it quickly. See if you can catch a movement of drapery or limb among the figures that crowd its walls. You cannot. However softly you enter, all movement in the room ceases the second before. Nevertheless, enter.
Slowly round the painted wall spreads the cold, voluptuous dream. Silence of a rested feast. Quiet of arrested lust. The minutes of the hour are stilled, the minute held, but not the hour, while all the time, a time ticks on. The persons of the drama raise their eyes to your intrusion here. Tacitly scan enough to know, in the erotic silent pause, definite, precise, and clear, the nature of your appetite, while all the time a time ticks on.
Ticks on. Ticks on.
The minute held, but not the hour.
Ticks on. Ticks on.
While all the time a time
ticks on. The room stands still. Panic and calm.
Not calm.
Panic. Presence of Pan.
And of another.
No, not yet.
He is here.
I say, not yet.
Look behind you.
He is here.
Name him.
Bacchus.
Answer. What is here for you?
The persons of the drama.
You know them?
Yes, I know them all.
And their names?
I cannot name anyone among them, but I know their faces one by one.
How many are there?
29.
There are 30.
With myself.
Name them.
No, I cannot name anyone among them.
You know their faces?
No, not now.
Nothing of them you can tell. Nothing of them.
Yes, I can.
But not the faces.
Not the names, not the faces.
Not the names.
Not the faces, not the names.
What then?
Only one thing remains.
And that thing?
I dare not say.
It is their eyes.
The silent face, the silent look, out of the wall from them to me, and in the wall from them to them. The silent ocular interchange, the silent recognizing eye, and the silent thought behind the eye, out of the wall from them to me.
And the young setter's sidelong glance, who lifts the syrinx to his lips.
The watchful, knowing, smiling gaze of him who lifts a hideous mask.
And shows behind the evil face Silenus, with the blank brute stare.
And the maiden's indrawn breath of terror as she sees him there.
I would not say, Macfarlane, that the evidence about the true nature of the pictures is what I would call a conclusive at any point.
No.
No, no, even when you've settled whether you should start here on the wall and go round to there. Or whether, as Professor Maieri asserts, you should start there and go round to here. No, I would not say that the evidence as to the true nature of the chamber is conclusive.
I take your point.
Yes, as you know, Macfarlane, strong claims have been made that the lady of the house was a high priestess of the Bacchic cult, which, however, we know to have been forbidden by the Roman law of the time. Now, if the cult were a secret practice, seems very extraordinary that the ritual chamber should have been in so exposed a position.
The professor says that it's the antechamber to the nuptial alcove where the lord and lady each night retire to rest.
But does it not seem to you possible that the frescoes may have perhaps had no religious significance at all?
You mean that the lord and lady will have had to pass through this chamber as they retired to rest, and may likely have been strongly impressed on the way by the erotic nature of some of the scenes depicted?
Well, something of that I was thinking, maybe.
Do I understand you suggest, then, that the motive for the highly spectacular decoration of the chamber was primarily aphrodisiac?
Yeah, I would not like to be dogmatic on the point. But you may recall other occasions where extremely famous artists were expressly engaged for such a purpose.
Aye.
There are numerous examples here in Pompeii. And you may call to mind the Palace of the Tea outside Mantua, where the painter Giulio Romano, he is mentioned in Shakespeare, was employed to decorate the bedchamber with frescoes conducive to a greater degree of earnestness in the conjugal performance of the occupant.
It would certainly explain the suggestive nature of some of the scenes delineated here.
Yes.
For example, the comparative abandonment of the scene between Bacchus and... forget the lass's name, huh? And the partial revelation a wee bit further on of the stylized symbol of the male organ of generation. And the act of flagellation yonder. And so forth. But I would not understand in that case the presence of the wee nude boy. He's said to be reading aloud from a papyrus the rites of initiation.
There can be no certainty on the point. It may be not a papyrus, but some small piece of children's literature given to him to distract his attention from the orgiastic character of the activities around him.
Oh. But McBride, though I agree that the room could not be kept secret if it was the gathering for some forbidden religious ritual, would not the same objection obtain if the room were purely aphrodisiac in its purpose?
Oh, there's always the possibility of an intentional ambiguity in such an apartment. Mm-hmm. To the more delicate and mystical-minded of his visitors, the host would probably have pointed out the religious significance of the scenes. While to the non-religious or to the police inspector, he may have asserted them to have been no more than pornographic in intention.
I see. Yes, maybe. It's very remarkable there should be no mention in the guidebooks of such an interpretation.
Aye.
Oh, Francesca, I know there are beautiful pictures here at Pompeii, but all those eternal paintings of birds and flowers and sad little moonlit landscapes on the walls, they must have been done by a set of idle women dilettanti with nothing better to do all day than imitate painters, like German spinsters in Capri who can only paint cliffs and trellised arbours and seascapes. The kind of pictures my sister always paints for my cousin's birthdays, in watercolours.
And when they have nothing important to say any longer, the great painters leave out the people and paint only the scenery. And where Carlo Crivelli gives us the Madonna and baby surrounded by vegetables, they give us only the vegetables and leave out the Madonna and baby. And less even of those, till they try to say that a mountain in France means just as much as St. Jerome, or a newspaper and a bottle as the mystery of the creation. It is a decadence.
How do you know that, Francesca?
My father says so. He's a little angry about it.
He has reason.
Yes. My mother says that he has always reason. And she's sometimes a little angry about that.
Shall I meet your father, perhaps?
Perhaps. I expect so.
When?
I don't know.
Tomorrow?
No, not tomorrow.
Then the day after tomorrow?
Soon.
And you think your father will like me, Francesca?
I expect so.
I am not bad-tempered, Francesca. I do not know why I spoke just now in that horrible... I never speak like that to anyone at all.
Oh, Attilio, it was nothing.
And naturally, I would put on my long trousers. I only wear these when I stay at Bosco Reale. And a tie, and my jacket, and my proper shoes.
He would not mind what you wore.
Oh, yes. It is very important.
Not to my father.
And I will put some brilliantine on my hair. A great quantity, in fact.
Ma Attilio, a me non piace mai la brillantina.
Not like it?
No, never.
Oh.
No.
Then water?
Yes. Attilio, look.
What is it?
The old gentleman and lady whom we saw. They're coming along the street.
How white they are, and properly clean.
Yes, and they are still quite silent.
Ah, they never speak. They are very intelligent. I like them.
And I.
They are coming from the house of the silver wedding.
Do you suppose they spoke to each other inside?
Oh, no, I'm sure.
Shh, shh, shh. They will hear what we are saying.
So shall we inspect the house of the silver wedding? It is so called because it was discovered in 1892.
Ah, yes, how interesting.
The year of the silver wedding of the king and queen.
Ah, yes.
And at that point, the excavation stopped. You see, the road is closed in just there. Did you notice, Francesca? Did they look at us as they passed?
Yes, both of them.
Good. They are very intelligent. An English archaeologist and his consort. I am sure they are. I am glad they noticed.
In out, in out, in out, in out, in out, in out. Breathe gently. Careful. Nice. Nice. Gone. Good. Hot all over back. Good. And the belly. Stone. No. And the belly. There. With a skip.
The heat increases, confusing the senses. It is time for the ingurgitation of great quantities of food, for the imbibition of appreciable draughts of wine, for digestive repose. The white old gentleman and lady, having passed, looked at, and been reapproved by Attilio and Francesca, make their way slowly, but always intelligently, through streets as silent as themselves, to emerge at last, cleanly, at the harbour gate. They are nearly out of sight, and as they pass out of hearing, they, it might almost seem, yes, it is well nigh certain, they begin to speak. They have gone to their hotel. 2.5 hours will pass before they return. Attilio and Francesca, unweary, only a little hungry, have clambered up onto unexcavated ground and are making their way southeast in the direction of the amphitheatre. Alive and upright, incessant in speech and gesture, they walk over the land of the dead. 7 yards below them, wherever they go, lie the imprisoned skeletons in their black nests, prone or supine, silent, immobile. 7 yards below them, the dead wait in their dead houses, their dead money scattered round them. The rain of filth that killed their bodies preserved their forms. Inside the black encasement that petrified quickly round them, the decay of flesh and blood proceeded, leaving only the skeleton therein, the dead butterflies inside the black cocoons. 18 centuries later, when the discoverer's pick struck against bone, he would suspend his labours. Liquid plaster would be poured into the hollow shape about the bones and allowed to harden there. And the dark husk of death might then be broken open. There they lay in their unchosen extinction. The dead face of an ordinary person, even of a suicide, is triumphant in comparison. Here's a man who died alone, face down. Here is the naked form of a young girl, her head pressed against the bosom of an older woman. Here a dog, strangled at the chain, twisted on its back, its legs like those of a broken upturned stool, its long jaws open in agony. Through the grass and the weeds and the wild flowers they go, the young ones, through the heat of the sun and the windless air, the distances quiver and dance in the heat.
In out, in out, in out, in out, in out, in out, in out. Sleep, 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 sleep.
Afternoon. Much has happened. MacBride and MacFarlane have long ago returned from the Villa of the Mysteries, and for some time past have been carefully inspecting Region 6. Judy and Walter, followed at a distance of 18 yards by Marjorie and Bill, have wandered along the street of the Consul and emerged into the spacious avenue beyond the Herculaneum Gate, the Street of the Tombs. They have dismissed their guide. Rather glad he's gone, to tell you the honest. Nice chap, but enough is as good as. Got a bit bored, too, with all those streets, one after another. Very interesting, of course. But all the same, after all, aren't they? I mean, when you've seen one.
I mean, when you've seen one, you've had it.
Yes, I couldn't agree more. Still, it's a bit fresher here anyway. More open.
Yes. Jolly hot, though, all the same.
Yes. Doesn't get sunstroke.
Well, the real danger is, when you stay away from the beach all day like this, some parts of you get browner than the others.
Oh, well, I suppose you could
well,
always...
Well, it is worrying, isn't it? I mean, you don't want to get a sort of pattern.
No. No, I suppose not.
What a long way in front old Judy and Walter are getting.
Energy. The energy of it.
Lots of ruins about still.
Yes, you think Jerry had been here almost. Was, of course, during the war. Bombs dropped here, too.
Ours?
Oh, yes, of course. Accident, of course.
Can't have made much difference anyway, when you come to think.
Oh, look, Marjorie, here's a bit of jolly dee. Three pillars set up there in a nice curve.
Oh, nice curved seat, too.
How about a nice sit-down?
Oh, yes.
That's better. Good to take the weight off your legs.
Oh, don't talk to me about weight. All that macaroni. Gosh. Where are Judy and Walter?
Just up there. They'll be back.
Just up there, they'll be back. And as they sit at ease on the seat of the exedra of the priestess Mamia, Bill, looking with deceptive intensity before him, suddenly runs the fingers of his right hand in sportive manner up Marjorie's spine.
Oh!
That caught you out. Poor old Marge.
Oh, dear, Bill, really, you shouldn't. Oh, dear.
What did you think it was?
I made sure it was a Liz. I can't bear them. They skip about everywhere.
Oh, they're all right. I like lizards. Like me to catch one for you?
Yes, and see me faint.
Shh! There's one just behind you.
Where?
There.
Oh, dear. Looking right at me. No, but it's the ruins I don't like.
Sweetie, it's all ruins.
That's what I mean. I don't like the atmos.
Oh, it's all right.
No, it's not. I don't like churchyards either.
Marjorie!
Oh, there's old Judy calling us.
Marjorie! Marjorie, come on!
Why doesn't she come back?
Well, I think she wants us to go on. Whatever for?
Oh, I see what it is. Dear old Judy.
What's up?
She's found another statue. On a tombstone. Come on. No rest for the wicked.
It is the sad, gaunt statue of a woman, holding about her the heavy draperies of the tomb, standing mysterious and alone among the ferns, one hand raised nearly to her face, and with an expression that seems to say that she is trying to remember.
What was that bitter point in time that bore the name of life? Mysterious, stupendous, lost in our thought that hidden country lies. As in our day of life there lay the secret land of death. And as in life our souls drew back from death, so now they draw back from the flame of life.
I want to be cremated.
Oh, really?
Yes, cremated. And have my ashes scattered.
What? Now, do you mean?
Don't be funny.
Sorry, old girl, it slipped out.
I'm quite sincere about it. Always have been. I don't like all this tomb business.
Oh, I don't know.
Well, I do. No marble dames over my last resting place, thank you all the same.
Well, she looks just like you, Judy.
Some hopes. Where are they?
They're just coming. Bill! Come on!
Coming!
Dawdling about. Is that roll of film in all right? Can you see?
Perfectly okay.
Mother will like this one. Oh, dear. All these stones, I keep slipping.
Marjorie says she wants her din.
Where have you been?
Oh, plodding along slowly. Some of us aren't as young as the rest of us.
Up to no good, I expect, as usual.
Judy!
Well, come on, we haven't all day to waste. Marjorie, go and stand over by that marble female and let me take a snap.
No, Judy, not by a tomb.
Why not?
Well, it's morb.
It's what?
Morb?
Nonsense.
Well, I'm not going in among all those fern things without any stockings on. No, thank you. Besides, I'm not going to be taken with my arms round a lady. It's silly.
Marjorie, look here.
Yeah, I'll go, Judy. There's nothing I'd like better.
Okay, then. Hurry up. Then we can have a bite to eat.
Shall I take it, Judy, or will you?
I will. You okay, Bill?
Yes, okay.
You're sticking your behind out again.
Sorry.
What's she like, Bill?
She's as cold as old Judy.
Silly great ass.
Pretend she's Marilyn Monroe, Bill.
Or Gina Lola Bridge.
Shut up, you two. Now. Ready?
Yes.
Hold it. Ready?
Click.
Click.
Click. The camera clicks in the street of the tombs, and at the same second, a mile and a half to the southeast, Attilio and Francesca reach, click, the top of the amphitheatre wall, and at the same second, a mile to the south, the clean old gentleman and lady raise, click, to their silent lips a glass of white wine, served by an intelligent waiter, and in the same second, 3/4 of a mile to the east-southeast, McBride emerges, click, from a roofless, empty, deserted, and unidentified house in the street of the baker, and rejoins his companion MacFarlane, who is waiting for him 2 yards, 9 inches to the west. Click.
Well, I don't think anybody could raise any objection to that, even supposing they knew.
Oh, no, man. It's not as if it were one of the more valuable excavations.
No. And after all, there's no other provision made.
But can't he be expected to go all the way back to the hotel?
No, certainly not. Let us make our way over to the Street of Abundance, will we? Take a peep at the new excavation, so-called.
It's down there, I think.
It must be. You're not feeling the heat too much?
That's it, just a wee bit.
Oh.
McBride, I was thinking while you were away, it's very remarkable that Europe in the Middle Ages should so strangely have lost sight of the art of sanitation. It had clearly been brought to a high pitch of perfection in the ancient world.
You cannot, I think, judge all places from Pompeii. The ready availability of running water must have tended to solve problems that the more inland towns may well have found insuperable.
I catch your drift.
It seems fairly plain they must have been somewhat uninhibited in their sanitary habits as between the sexes.
But that I've noticed to be a phenomenon by no means uncommon in Italy even today. You may recall the very exposed nature of the urinal at the back of the Piazza Bra at Verona.
Aye, so much so that on the one occasion I attempted to utilize it personally, I was quite unable to commence.
It would seem from Pompeii that the simplest form of the convenience was a broken amphora inserted and embedded into the cement of a corner wall at a crossroads as a sort of elongated chamber pot.
A position which must have rendered it, if anything, even more conspicuous than the contemporary object at Verona.
Certainly. It is no doubt the origin of the line in the poet Catullus, Nunc in quadrivis et angi portis.
How would you translate that?
Well, see, now in the quadrivia on the Angiporti.
I see.
The former being a crossroads and the latter a blind alley where the object was situated.
How does it go on?
I can't remember.
Oh.
It's one of the poems dedicated to Lesbia, the young lady with whom the unfortunate poet was for a time infatuated.
But I wouldn't understand the connection a young lady might have with the object in question. You would say from its shape and incident.
They proceed to the new excavations at the eastern end of the Street of Abundance. They are not appreciably hungry, though it is now 2:15. In any case, MacFarlane remembers another poem, which runs as follows.
In great heat, never eat.
This poem is not by Catullus. MacFarlane's grandfather composed it in the hot summer of 1870, the year of the Franco-Prussian War. And MacBride agrees that it would be a folly in an unfamiliar country recklessly to overload the digestive organs and incur thereby the risk of enteric disturbance, difficult to cope with adequately when in almost daily movement from place to place. This risk, however, has been taken by Judy, Walter, Bill and Marjorie, who have picnicked heartily from their luncheon basket in a shady dell near the monument of the Istasidiae. Stone glimmers all round them, beyond the trees. The sky blazes white overhead. Nice to get into the shade. Almost cool for the first time today.
Almost cool for the first time today.
Yes. Lovely spot. Lovely.
Bit eerie, though.
Oh, I don't know.
Lizards?
Oh, Bill, no. Be silly.
Are we going on?
What, already? After all that vino?
Give a young man a chance in life, Judy.
All right, then. Mind if I slip my shoes off, boys and girls?
Do.
Ah, that's a relief.
Blister okay, Judy?
As near as.
Good.
And I don't know about my other little playmates, but here's me for 10 minutes shut-eye.
That's an idea. Helps the digestion.
I'm asleep already.
And please don't wake me if I snore.
A little siesta under the trees. We shall be just like the four lovers. I mean, the two couples in Midsummer's Night's Dream by Shakespeare, shan't we? We did it at school for Camem, in the open air, just outside the cricket pav. I did Helena, the tall one.
Yes.
I must have been awful.
Well, I don't know.
I got a good crit in the school mag. I like acting. Wouldn't take it up, though. For one thing, a girl I know at Rada says
Marjorie.
That she...
Marjorie?
Yes, dear? Shut up. Okay.
Far away on the southern slope of the shadowless amphitheatre, Attilio and Francesca sit. They are a long way away, but you cannot miss them. He talks to her, she listens, she talks also. From time to time they glance down into the great stone-girt oval space, perfect, simple, and emphatic. There was the entrance for the gladiators. There the entrance for the beasts. Somewhere the emperors must have sat, if ever they came down this way.
Here the bright day is even apt for sudden strangeness. It is said that the traveller, sitting with his book, or dozing on the arena's lip, has lifted up a casual eye and seen substantial in the day legions of passionate soldiery, gazing intent with open mouth before them at the combatants. The vision, instantaneous, instantly goes. But not before he through the summer air has caught the sound of their triumphant roar.
Me. I must not watch him, and I must, as there he lies. I must not watch too long, lest when he wakes his eyes open to mine. I must not. It must not be. I must watch instead the lizard or the tree or the stones he knows so well, which recognize the warm, bright glance, affectionate and wise, he turns upon them, so that I may not see the sunlight fall on his mouth, nor the surrender to sleep of his dark hair, nor clear and sweet the curve of his silent cheek, the golden splendor of his throat and his arms and his thighs and his sandaled feet. I will watch the lizard, or the stone, or the sky above him, lest he should see when he wakes, dear Attilio, how dearly I love him.
Breathe gently, careful, in out, hot all over back. Noise? No. Sleep? Yes, just a bit. Watch. No, better skip.
Francesca, Francesca, something ran over my hand. Did you see? A lizard, perhaps.
She sleeps. Francesca sleeps beside me,
sleeps in grace. I can see her how she is when I am away. I can watch her as I have wanted to watch her all day. And she will not know how well I know her face. Secret her sleep. I am not there. All trace, all thought of me is banished. I only stay to be the first thing in her waking eyes. I only may protect till then that sleep in which I have no place. Now I could hurt her, and will not. Will not seek to lay my hand softly on her soft breast. I will not press my cheek against her cheek. I will even her shining hair leave uncaressed. I will not. I will only... Oh, Francesca, can it do you harm if I place a kiss like a whisper into your open palm?
Attilio.
Francesca.
Do not move. This minute hold. In this concave of grass and stone, may your love and may this hour, that slaughterous, bloody past, atone.
No, do not move. This minute hold. Do not remember nor retrace that far back day when such as you sank in destruction in this place. Once more with barren ashes covered. Once more the lava. Once more turned to stone. Let him come now and now, whose wont it is to praise man's power and chance. Here let him see how the harsh nurse covers her children's eyes.
Darkened house wrote on the wall the words Sodom and Gomorrah. There were many for whom in the darkness and the rain of stones and water there could be no escape. Priests hid behind the altar, men and women huddled in the cellars, the gladiators in the barracks. All who remained indoors collecting their treasures were doomed to suffocation.
Hold your torch up, you fool! Yes, I can't see. I can't pull it out of the chest. You take these bags carefully.
Yes, master.
You can carry more than that. Take these as well. As when we go out into the street, keep close to me. Don't move unless you see me.
Lucifer should be trapped if we stay any longer. Please,
be quiet.
Papa, don't make me stay here.
Be quiet, I tell you, both of you.
But Papa!
When we go out, you, Marcus and Horatius, you listening?
Yes, master.
Yes, keep
master.
3 paces in front of me. Keep there all the time. Hold the torch up, I told you.
Yes, sir.
Well, hold it! Hold it, then!
Yes, sir.
Here, for God's sake, give it to him. Give it to the other one, you're feeling it, you.
Mistress, we can't stay any longer.
With me.
Ah, for the love of God, send those women out. Send them out.
Let
the stupid whores lose their own way in the dark. Am I to leave my money and jewels for a set of dirty slaves?
We're as good as dirty.
Send them out.
Dirty great monster.
Send them out. When we get back, by heaven, I'll have them whipped.
Oh, my dears, go. How can it be so? Stay with me
here,
darling.
You take this statue and stand by the door with it and wait for me.
Yes, master.
Don't let it go. It's the most precious one in the whole of my collection.
We dare not wait any longer. Lock the doors and come.
Not leaving my silver here, don't think it. They'll be looting the place the minute our backs are turned. Hold the torch.
Papa!
Patricia, be a good girl and take this little bag. It's full of your mother's jewels. Marcus, take this as well.
No! Don't take your statues yourself! And your money and your jewels!
Slave!
Who do you think you are? You'll be as naked as we are in an hour's time. The girl was right. We're as good as dirty you any dirty day. Take them. I won't touch them. I'm going.
Why, you miserable dog?
No, don't touch me!
Yes. 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 No, don't hurt him!
Well, filthy bastard, I hope I've done for
you. Yes, in the name of heaven, will you come?
Go if you want to. But by God, if we ever get out of this,
Papa,
I can tell you
I can't see anything! I can't see anything!
The hot, wet ash suffocated them as they lay or cowered, their clothes pulled over their heads for protection. Or it caught them as they stumbled in their flight. It pressed them down, surrounded them, engulfed them, found out every curve of their bodies, and settled there and hardened, pressing inch by inch round their lives. The last fraction of breathed in air passed out again in a bubble from their mouths into the filthy blackness, and the filth that had already closed their eyes and filled their ears and nostrils occupied their last point of struggle against their clenched teeth. That done, it mounted over them, piled itself heavily upon them, holding them, alone or embraced. It filled the streets and the alleys, the theatres, the bars and the temples and the great open spaces. There they lay, in the cellar, in the doorway, under the temple arch, in the colonnade. Some huddled together in hopelessness, and some were not with others, not even near them.
A mischief falling. I cannot move my arms. Are my eyes open? I don't think so. I don't think they are. I must be helped. If I were not so thirsty, I said I never would ask them for help. I never wanted to be a burden to them. Now I must. It's hard to breathe, but I think I must cry out to them. Yes. Ah! They'll hear it and come again. Ah! Perhaps they can't hear, but they're louder. Ah! On the ship at Tarentum, the wine dripped on the floor from the captain's table. We lay and let it pour into our mouths. In a moonlit orchard near Capua, I took you, and your mouth was cool against mine because it was nighttime. All along the shore, the waves bent back. In a long white frill, and the water sparkled all the way to Sorrento. And you bounced me in the water, crying, "You're 5 years old today." Can you hear me?
Francesca.
They have not moved. His head remains bent over her hand, and she still feels the gentle, exact print of his lips on her palm. After a little while, he raises his head, and their eyes meet, each seeing in the others a light they have not seen in faces before. She lifts the hand he has kissed and places the back of it against his cheek, as though to discover if it is as real as she has believed.
Attilio?
Francesca?
You said you would show me the Friangular Torum.
The what?
The Triangular... the Triangular Forum.
No, the Friangular Torum.
Oh, Attilio.
I shall see you tomorrow.
It is possible.
But probably? Yes, let us see each other tomorrow. Here.
Well, that may be difficult.
Then I could come to Naples. We can see the pictures from Pompeii in the museum. And I can come and meet your father.
But...
Yes, it is better at once. I am older than you, Francesca.
Nearly 2 years. That is nice.
Certainly, it is best. But it is a grave responsibility for me. It is better to have these things in black and white. You said you had 5 elder sisters.
Yes.
Very well. Your parents will be very glad that you should be promised. Yes?
Perhaps.
Certainly. And now may I kiss you? You permit it?
A little one.
Oh, yes. Ah, Francesca. Oh, thank you.
Prego.
And now we will go to the Friangular Torum.
Oh, perhaps we will see the clean old gentleman and lady.
Yes, and we will call on our way at the Temple of Isis, which I love very much.
Egyptian.
Egyptian, yes.
Immenso, immenso fa del mondo spirito fecondato.
Never, never, never have the buildings in the Oriental Quarter of the new excavations shone more brightly than they do this evening as Attilio and Francesca pass between them. The scarlet frescoes on the streets seem like works of art. The ancient political slogans on the walls have the radiance of a new-found, unexpected sincerity. And indeed, in the cool wind that wanders around the city after even the hottest day, when the evening seems to open, relent, and bless, an air of happiness, of duty well done, pervades the place. Through the deepening evening, the pilgrims are making their way through the streets to the gates. McBride and MacFarlane, for example, they have come to the end of a long day, no minute wasted, no hour idly spent, a day of profit and refreshment to the mind.
And in fact, MacFarlane, I think it might well be said that throughout the ancient world we find, as regards the physical life, a frank mixture of the practical and the sordid in almost equal proportions, insofar as you can demarcate proportion in such matters.
The ancient world made no disguise of its passions, not even when its passions were of an irregular or abnormal character. Or so Professor MacTaggart says on page 480 of his wee book on the subject.
No, though at Pompeii the passions, if promiscuous in their expression, appear to have been of an entirely normal nature.
But doubtless any irregular improprieties have been disguised by the modern authorities and the interest of the tourist traffic.
True.
Professor Helsborough is quite certain that what modern psychiatry would term homosexuality was prevalent alike in the Greek and the Roman civilizations.
And he attributes it, does he not, to the comparative seclusion of the women folk from the men and a consequent relaxation of the normal taboos?
Something of that, aye.
Yes.
And he adds that a contributory effect may have been the custom of exercising in a nude state in the palaestra. It's a reasonable point, I think.
Aye.
No, I'm bound to say I noticed nothing of the kind at the University College of Dundee.
Aha. But there, of course, you will have had plentiful access to feminine company in the evenings.
True. And in the gymnasium, a small pair of shorts and a white singlet or sweater were always insisted upon. The singlet in the summer, the sweater in the winter, when the days tended to get a wee thing chilly.
And certainly Judy and Walter, Marjorie and Bill have done their duty. Refreshed by a pleasant 2.5-hour nap under the trees, they have arisen and passed an energetic final hour of discovery. This has incidentally included the thorough examination of a house, which, though they are unaware of the fact, they had already visited with the guide in the morning.
And now, twilight falling round them, they are sauntering across the breezy space of the forum, amicably, harmoniously, nostalgically, team spirited. Dusk is creeping into every street of the city and filling every house. Through the darkening shades of the Villa of the Mysteries, the veiled maiden still enters upon her eternal initiation. Still she recoils from the face of the Silenus. Still, half naked under the chastiser's whip, she weeps into her companion's lap. And in the street of plenty, a lizard creeps into the house of the priest Amandus.
In out, in out, in out, in out, in out. Cold all over back now. Cold. Leaf near? Yes. Can wriggle? Just a bit. Stone under belly. Good. Cold. Sleep. In out, in out, in out. Sleep. Sleep. Just a bit. Now.
And in the most ancient quarter of the city, the Stabian Quarter, stands the triangular forum with the Greek stumps of an ancient temple in the midst of it.
The Triangular Torum, the oldest ruins and the best. We will come here often. I love the two theatres and the promenade and those small oaks. They are sacred to Apollo. And best of all, my beloved Doric columns.
Those?
Yes, a whole long row. They were built by the Greeks. Ah, che bellezza. You can see them best from here, from the portico. A whole long row of them vanishing away in the dusk. Perspective. Come and stand close to me.
Attilio, do you see?
See what, Francesca?
By those ruined stumps in the trees.
The archaic temple.
Mm.
Yes, it is the old gentleman and lady.
They are still not speaking.
But they are thinking a great deal. They are very intelligent. They do not need to talk much.
But look, Attilio.
Yes.
They are speaking.
She has turned to him.
And put her hand on his arm.
Francesca, I wish I knew what they were saying. Yes, she is speaking.
It is time to go now, my dear.
Yes. Yes, dear. Time to go.
What were you thinking about?
Oh, only that young couple by the gate.
The boy and the girl, yes.
Nice young people they look.
They are beautiful, yes. A beautiful pair, and so very young.
I've seen the boy about here before, I think. Haven't you?
Several times, yes, but not the girl.
No. Ah, I'm glad he's found such a charming companion. Yes, perhaps we might have spoken to him. Oh, well, time to go, I suppose, Frodia.
I told you it was.
Oh, dear, we've only 3 more days.
But we shall come back again, I hope. I hope so.
So much of it's just the same as it was before the war, you know. Well, naturally, but I mean, I've remembered a great deal of it, Flo. They're slower at the excavations now, of course, than they used to be. But better, of course, much better. I've remembered a great deal.
I know you have, my dearest. Are you tired?
No, not a bit. Not the least bit. Are you?
No, but they'll be turning us out in a minute.
Yes. Let's go. Those two are still there. Hey, do you think we might say good night as we pass them?
Oh, yes, I think so. They're looking straight at us.
Afraid we must have been rather in the way. Hope not.
Oh, I hope not.
Shh.
Good night.
Oh, good night, signore. Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
You here tomorrow?
Oh, yes, yes, signore.
Yes, sir.
Good. Good. We too.
Splendid.
Bravi, signore.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night. Good night.
Good. Nice young couple.
As bright as lamps.
Yes. May they remain so.
May they remain so. Come, my sweet.
That ends The Streets of Pompeii by Henry Reed, with music by Anthony Smith Masters. This was the cast. The Sibyl of Cumae, Flora Robson. The Traveller, Marius Goring. Francesca, Rosalind Shanks. Attilio, Carlo Cura. The Lizard, Carlton Hobbs. Judy, Hilda Kreisman. Marjorie, Deborah Dallas. Bill, Derek Seaton. Walter, David Spencer. Professor McBride, Frank Duncan. Professor McFarlane, John Lorry. The Guide, Hector Ross. The Merchant, Godfrey Kenton. His wife, Kathleen Helm. An Old Man, Malcolm Hayes. The Silent Old Gentleman, Carlton Hobbs. The Silent Old Lady, Kathleen Helm. With Sidney Fell, solo clarinet, and orchestra conducted by Patrick Saville. Production by Douglas Cleverdon.
And that was the 1970s stereo production of The Streets of Pompeii.